on 882 6BR. This is the Perth Future Forum. 6BR. By 2026, Perth's population is predicted to reach 3.27 million people, and by 2050, 4.6 million.
Yes, and welcome to the Perth Future Forum. Gary Adsett back with you after 10 o'clock. Thanks, everyone, for your company. And don't forget, as we go through some of the issues here this morning up until 12 o'clock, we invite you to take part. This is your city. Tell us what concerns you about where we're heading, because whether we like it or not, we are growing, and we are growing at a rapid pace. There are some things that are slowing us down. The economy has certainly had a downturn recently. The boom and bust scenario that we go through quite regularly is on the bust again to a degree. What does that mean for jobs? What does that mean for our future? We're going to talk about all those issues throughout the course of the morning. We're going to talk about law and order. We're going to talk about the environment. But to start with, in the studio with us now, I have Deirdre Wilmot, the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Thanks for joining us, Deirdre.
Good morning, Gary.
I also have Carolyn Smith, the Secretary of United Voice. Good morning.
Good morning, Gary.
And I have Nicole Rook. Rook, is that correct?
Rokey.
Rokey's better. Deputy Chief Executive, Chamber of Minerals and Energy. Thanks very much for your time. First of all, on that, and I think you'd all have a common view on this, we are a boom-bust economy. Has that got to change, Deirdre, as far as you're concerned, in terms of our reliance on the mining industry so much?
Well, what we see in the mining industry is really a cycle, and we have just come through an enormous investment cycle, which was driven by commodity prices at the time. But I don't think we should see ourselves in terms of boom and bust. The investment is seeing projects completed. We will be the world's second largest LNG producer in our own right by 2018, and we are already the world's largest seaborne producer of iron ore. So we are a huge player in those industries, and we will continue to be so into the future. But what we now see is people becoming available, investment becoming available to grow other industries. So as an economy, we're actually really in a great position.
All right. Does unemployment worry anyone here at the moment? I know that the figures came out yesterday. It has sort of stabilised to a degree, but certainly I think it was the highest unemployment in the last round of figures in 13 years here in Western Australia. I'll go to you, Carolyn, on that one, because you represent people that perhaps are coming and saying, I'm about to lose my job or whatever?
Look, I think unemployment is a real issue, and underemployment is also an issue. So whilst we see the figures of unemployment go up, and we have to remember they're real people with mortgages, with kids, and they are doing it hard, what we're also seeing is many, many workers who, are working part-time, who want more hours, who need more hours, and they're seeing their hours get cut back. So we'd actually say that unemployment is probably bigger than what we see because of the rise of part-time insecure work, where people aren't necessarily considered unemployed, but they're still really struggling.
Well, I'll throw a hand grenade in now then. Maybe longer Sunday trading hours, less concern for employers in paying penalty rates on those Sundays might generate employment.
Well, look, I think, I'd like to take a step back really and say what drives our economy. And I think we say that good, secure jobs, well-paid, secure jobs actually drive our economy. It's about fairness, but it's also about economic growth, because if we have low-wage jobs, insecure jobs, that affects the economy. It affects consumer confidence. It affects spending. So you can have Sunday trading, but if people, for example, lose their penalty rates for working on Sunday, they don't have the disposable income to go out and support small and medium business and spend their money.
All right. Well, what would you both say about that, Deirdre? First of all, if I can, go on, Deirdre. I mean, what do you say? Because in one instance there, we're talking about how we need to create more jobs, more hours that people can work. And on the other hand, we're saying, they should be paid more for those Sunday hours. We're sort of still separating out that Sunday from any other day of the week.
First of all, if I can agree with Carolyn that unemployment, even at the relatively stable levels we're seeing now, is always a concern, because it does mean that there are people who are not finding jobs. We're particularly concerned about any level of youth unemployment, because that's the young people of our future who need to find that experience in the workplace. In terms of how do we actually increase the number of jobs, we would always say you need to look at business and the environment in which business is working, and is business able to grow the number of jobs that they offer. And our members have certainly identified trading hours and particularly the penalty rates in retail and hospitality as a barrier to being able to offer more jobs. In some instances, businesses don't open because they simply can't afford to open. In other instances, they open, but they operate their business themselves because they can't afford to bring people in. So those are jobs that are there to be created, but are being held back. In a world where increasingly we're looking for services and retail and hospitality on weekends, so people's lives aren't that 9 to 5, 5 days a week that they were in the past.
Nicole, can I just bring it back to the boom bust, the cycle that we seem to go through here in WA, and obviously your industry is affected by it dramatically. What's the sort of job situation, for example, right now with mining companies and so on? Are they still laying off?
Look, what we certainly see in the resources sector, and there's been the conversation about moving from construction into operations, and during the construction phase we do have higher employment numbers, and we are still probably have about another 12 months before we completely come out of the construction phase. So yes, we would anticipate that we are going to see a reduction in the workforce. Some work we've done indicates through to 2025 that we'll look at only being a workforce of about 87,000 people from a peak of 122 in 2012. But that's actually double what we were 10 years ago. So what we, and you know, Carolyn used the word growth, Deirdre used the word growing, that's what we need to be looking at, is how do we provide opportunities for businesses in Western Australia to grow, because that provides job opportunities. We've seen evidence of that over the last 10 years.
Yeah, and of course, when you do have the downside of things with the resources sector, you do see people suddenly out of work, and you know, they're either moving out of Perth and going back east, or they're looking around for a job. Is it always going to be like that? Is that just the nature of the game, that we are going to have peaks and troughs? It's simple as that.
Look, the reality is that's the cycle of the resources sector. We're driven by global markets. We're driven by those countries that want to buy our commodities. What concerns us is that if you look back in 2008, 2009, we had a whole heap of projects. We had $100 billion worth of projects ready for construction. You look 5 years out now in the resources sector, and we don't have that same pool of projects ready to go. So for us, it's about looking at how do we make sure exploration happens, how do we make sure that we do have those new projects that can keep coming to fruition. But realistically, because we're reliant on commodity prices to underwrite the projects, yes, we will be a cyclical industry.
All right.
Gary,
yes, Carolyn.
Just going to that issue of us being a resource-based economy, and also really what Deirdre talked about youth unemployment. And I think, you know, we see parts of Perth where we've got 25% youth unemployment, and that is a problem for those communities, but for Perth as a whole. And I think we are a resource-based economy, and we've got to leverage that.
But are we a bit too resource-centric in terms of, you know, the broad picture is that not everyone's in the mining and resources
right.
game.
That's right.
They can get left behind during boom cycles, can't
that's
they?
That's right. And we want to leverage that strength to make sure we are also in manufacturing. So we don't want to just dig it up out of the ground. We don't just want to construct the mines. We want to be doing the fabrication for that work. We want to be doing the engineering, the development, because there are real jobs to create out of the resource industry. And we need to be creating those jobs, creating apprenticeships for our young people. We see a dive in the number of apprenticeships for young people, in those sort of entry jobs for people to build a career and build a life for themselves. So I think we have to not just live for today, but plan for tomorrow, leverage those opportunities, and be doing the fabrication, be doing the development work.
Do companies come to you, Deirdre, and say that they're not taking on as many apprenticeships as they'd like to because of economic concerns? They're just not bringing enough young people into industries at the moment, do you know?
We're actually seeing apprenticeships hold up quite well, but there has been a reduction in the number of traineeships. But just to come out to the bigger picture, the opportunity to capitalise on what we're calling the boom in investment in resources is now. And it's, will we actually retain in Western Australia the services that will support those 20, 30, 40, 50-year projects? Can we continue to grow as a research centre for the LNG and resources sector?
What do you think of the way it looks at the moment?
Well, we've had a huge influx of companies coming to Western Australia, particularly to support the oil and gas and the mining industries.
But they do come. And then they go. I mean, an example. I saw on Gumtree the other day, not to bore you too much, but I was looking for a cheap mountain bike, and there on Gumtree was a mountain bike. I go over to speak to the bloke who'd come from Sweden or somewhere. He'd lost his job. He was brought over into the oil and gas industry. He lost his job and had 2 days before he was, you know, leaving his house and taking the family all back, and it came upon him very suddenly, and he was really disappointed with it. But I know that's the nature of the game, but... He, you know, how could we keep people like that during those periods of downturn?
Well, the challenge is to look at the jobs that are created by having those projects, and hopefully a pipeline of future projects. But the challenge is to make sure that businesses find Western Australia an attractive place to do business, and that's dependent on that is our tax environment, our industrial relations environment, and the ability to grow businesses. The livability of Perth is incredibly important, so that people do want to come here and live here and be part of that economy going forward, because we're now at a stage where services can be delivered from other parts of the world into our industries. So we really want those industries to be based here.
On 882 6PR, this is the Perth Future Forum. $114 billion worth of minerals and petroleum was sold from WA in 2014.
Welcome back to the Perth Future Forum. And just if you are hearing a bit of background noise, folks, we've actually taken it out of the studio. We've come into the very salubrious surrounds of the 6PR boardroom, which is a work in progress again. So if you do hear that, that's why it sounds a little bit different to you. But don't forget, 9221882 is the number. I'm going to throw one at you. Why do we have to be working 24/7? Why do we have to be open on a Sunday? Why is it this sort of place that I grew up in Perth suddenly become this big commercial hub, and it's all about money, money, money? Who wants to go first?
Well, Gary, I might start. And one thing I would say is actually the figures show that the number of people working on weekend hours has not changed for the last 10 years.
Really?
So that's okay. You know, the figures don't lie. That percentage has not changed. So, yes, there is some change to what we do, but actually it's not as big as people would have us say.
All right. Should we be driven, though, towards, you know, sort of making as much money as we can and working as long hours as we can as we go into the future?
But it's about choice and lifestyle. And what we have seen with the opening of shops on Sundays is that that's become one of the most popular trading days of the week, because people who are working other days of the week actually have the opportunity to catch up on their life on a Sunday. And so
choice.
So it's about choice and ease of living in a community.
Is it choice? I mean, if you're working hard, you know, on two weeks on, 1 week off, or whatever your roster might be with the mining industry, and then suddenly you lose your job, you didn't have much choice there. So you do tend to put your all into it because you know it could end. We're sort of just driven by that. It's particularly in the resource sector, aren't we?
Well, certainly in the resource sector and on site on mining operations, they are 24/7 operations, and that's effectively driven by the large capital investment and the need to get a return on those investments. To turn those pieces of equipment off and not have them running is not a way for companies to turn a profit to be able to grow and offer jobs. When people come back to Perth, and I know fly-in, fly-out's a really contentious issue and a really relevant issue at the moment, people want to be able to access things in their downtime. And what we certainly are seeing is responsiveness of some businesses in Perth. We're seeing responsiveness by things like golf clubs to off offer more flexible memberships, gyms to offer more flexible memberships, so that those people who are working away, when they come back to Perth, can access those kinds of services outside of the kind of more traditional hours.
So. All right. I was going to throw it to, you know, we talk about the wealth of the state and so on a lot, but do we talk enough about the poverty and the people that are battling as much as we should, do you think? Look, or do we just turn a blind eye to a lot of that?
I think there is a problem when we just talk about the mining industry in Western Australia. There's a whole range of lower and actually middle income people for whom the mining boom actually made their lives harder. They made houses more expensive. They made services more expensive. You know, we kind of admit that. And so I think this whole thing about the economy is not there just for itself. The economy is there to create a society for us. And we have to make sure that when we're building an economy, it's an economy that serves our society, serves people, and serves everyone.
So, okay. Yeah, sorry, go on, Nicole.
Before Carolyn used the word leverage, yeah. And I think, yes, the mining sector is only one industry in Western Australia, and we do need to look at how do we leverage mining and the resources sector to be an enabler. And a key way for that in addressing services and government services is through the utilisation of royalties. So we saw the other year the government received $6.9 billion in royalties. Last year, we have only seen that be $5.8 billion. So, I mean, they're big numbers, and they have direct implications on the state government's ability to provide support services, to provide health education, to help provide funds and grants to support those who aren't so fortunate. So I think leverage is the key thing there. We can't just look after the resource sector. I think it's incredibly important. But equally, we need it to do well so that the government can utilise the services to provide support to the broader community.
Deirdre Wilmot from the CCI, can I just ask, has the government done enough to sort of slow its spending, its own issues of debt, its own issues of deficit?
We were certainly pleased with the recent annual report for the last financial year that showed that spending growth did come in under budget. That was very welcome, and that's the first time in quite a few years that we've seen that outcome. But there are still certainly pressures within government, both on revenue and in turn they will have to focus on spending.
So into the future, Carolyn Smith from United Voice, will workers do their bit to keep costs down for government by not asking for anything sort of above inflation rates, et cetera, in terms of pay rises?
Well, look, I think, government spending, you know, we really have to look at the priorities. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Elizabeth Key, but to spend money on things like that above services, hospitals, education workers, look...
But they'll argue they've done all that. You know, if the Premier was sitting here right now, he'd say, well, hang about, look at the hospitals we built. Look at them. They're everywhere. They're popping up everywhere. We've done all of it.
Well, you know, I think in terms of where the money could have been spent, I think there could have been better priorities, and that money could have gone in. We've seen, you know, harsh cuts. Look, our members in hospitals accepted a CPI, an inflation rate wage rise recently. And, you know, when you're on 40 grand, that's not very much. But what they were absolutely focused on was privatisation, was decent services, and the cuts to staffing that they've seen in hospitals.
Do you agree with that, Deirdre, that the privatisation issue in relation to, well, let's talk about Fiona Stanley Hospital. It hasn't worked. So going forward, is privatisation something that the government should be more cautious of?
Well, we think privatisation is absolutely critical because the private sector can often deliver those services more effectively or operate those facilities more effective, providing a higher standard of service. Also in areas like infrastructure investment, the government can't afford to keep doing everything in order to keep up with the population growth and keep maintaining the level of infrastructure we need to support our community.
But they can spend $4.3 billion on contracts for Fiona Stanley Hospital, and all we've seen is bad headline upon bad headline. Why couldn't the government have done that themselves and create jobs themselves?
Well, the important thing is to look at how to actually best deliver those services, and managing a contract, particularly at the beginning, is always challenging, but I'm confident that in the long run that will be a better outcome for the people of Perth in terms of the standard of
Carolyn
care.
Carolyn shaking her head from United Boys here. Go on, I'm sure.
Look, Gary, we've been really polite up until now, and you know, I have great respect for Deidre and where she's coming from, but really to sit here and say that in the same breath as we're talking about Fiona Stanley, that privatisation delivers better services and saves money, just shows how little she knows about hospitals and how they work. We have members working at Fiona Stanley Hospital. We know the inside line in terms of what's happening there. And Serco is not delivering a quality service, and they will cost the state more. You know, we saw at Royal Perth Hospital with private contractor cleaners, we spent millions, $2 million cleaning up the superbug outbreak that came because private contractors, not the staff, they just didn't have enough staff and they didn't have proper processes, didn't clean the hospital properly. So to just say privatisation is better and cheaper just doesn't work.
Deirdre?
Health has always got to be an area of focus for the government. The community expects a very high standard of service, but at the same time it is an area that all governments are facing huge spending pressure. So we need to keep working to find the best way of delivering the highest standard of care.
Nicole, if I can, from the Chamber of Minerals and Energy, can you just tell us as briefly as you can, where are we going? What do you see as the future in terms of the resource sector right now? Looking ahead, for those people that are listening that might be thinking, you know, I might have just missed this cycle, but how far off before I might be able to break into it and get a job, etc.?
Look, what we're seeing at the moment are those companies that are seeking to position themselves to provide services for operations. There's certainly opportunity to be able to support the ongoing operations, whether that's through maintenance, whether it's through professional services, whether it's through the actual mining operations and provision of equipment. So that's where we see there's opportunity in the short term. Those companies that are doing well at the moment are those that are seeking to not just focus on construction. When's the cycle going to change? I wish I knew that. I wish my crystal ball would tell me that, because I would certainly be buying shares in an appropriate point in time. It's unknown. As I mentioned before, what concerns us is what the future looks like, because we don't have the big projects. We see the industry is still a strong industry. We're a resilient industry. We're not going to go away in Western Australia. So those that want to find opportunity, it's in how do they support the ongoing operations.
All right, we've run out of time for this particular segment. Thanks very much to Deirdre Wilmot, the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Thanks, Deirdre. Thanks to Carolyn Smith, the Secretary of United Voice. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thanks
and Nicole
for the opportunity.
Rook, I'm going to get it right here, Rookie.
Rokey,
Deputy Chief Executive, Chamber of Minerals and Energy, WA. Thanks very much for that.
Thank you, Gary.
Back soon.